Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
To the phone lines we go. Fiona, good morning.
Good morning, Lee.
How are you, Fiona?
I'm very nervous.
How are you?
I'm nervous and I'm excited speaking to you.
Okay, well, don't be either. No need to be nervous at all. We're just going to chat, right? Are you picking up on some of the calls there over the past few days with regards to people?
Well, I do in and out. I do listen to you when I can in the car if I'm back home.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
So we spoke about nursing homes and residential care settings and things like that.
Yeah.
We spoke about some families now over the last few days who are taking cases against nursing homes for the deaths of loved ones from COVID.
Yeah.
Ballynoe was one that sprung to mind. Just tell us your own story in your own words.
Well, my husband was,
I can understand why you would.
Yeah. During COVID and, like, obviously we weren't allowed to him. And, you know, he collapsed basically at home in the shower. He was working from home during COVID. And yeah, it's just sorry, no need, because I never really spoke about it.
How long ago was this?
It's 5 years, but we're really struggling on the 5th year because it's like so real. It's like, you know, my kids can't believe it still. But yeah, he just collapsed and I dropped the kids.
Was it an aneurysm or a stroke or a heart attack?
No, nothing. They just said his blood was low when he went in. And so they tried to get it up, you know, and it came up and he was coming home. And they said the day he was coming home, he died. They just said that he'd have to come in once a month for this therapy, like a chemo drug. And I was just saying, are you sure? Like, he can only take a paracetamol. He can't take lots of medications. He had allergies to food and medication.
Yeah.
So I don't know what I meant to say on the radio. So
Was there a death certificate for your beautiful husband?
We did it on an autopsy.
And did they give a cause of death? Because you describe him as a fit man.
He was. He was on Martins. He barely drank. Didn't smoke. They did, and the coroner up there was so lovely ringing me, and he just wasn't happy. He just wanted to do an autopsy, and he got down, you know, the woman from, want to say her name.
No, it's all right, you don't have to. But what was the result of the autopsy?
So it was like a name for like just low, like anemia, really.
Okay.
You know, so it's...
What a tragedy.
Yeah, they administered the drug at 10:45, and they told me the side effects would be a massive heart attack and a brain hemorrhage, but that's not going to happen. And everything was over the phone. It wasn't face-to-face. And they administered it at 10:45 and he was dead at 11 with a massive heart attack and a brain hemorrhage.
What?
So,
really?
Yeah. Yeah.
As a consequence of the injection?
Well, they said it wasn't. So we just feel we never really got an answer. And then
sounds like you have unanswered questions.
It's going to cost you money you don't have. So you can't, you know what I mean? So, yeah, I feel if I was allowed in there, he'd still be alive, because on the reports, things aren't adding up. Like one of the nights, they said they were putting him on steroids and I said, oh, he can't take them. No, he'll be fine. He rang me at 11 o'clock at night saying, sorry, like, we aren't the kids at school, and he was making no sense. So when I rang the ward, and I never really had to ring the ward because we were always FaceTiming one another, and I said, my husband, no, he's asleep. And I said, he's not, he's ringing me. She goes, no, he's fast asleep, I just checked on him. So I rang my sister, I said, look, they're telling me he's not, he's just off the phone to me, he's making no sense. And I looked up that date and they said he had a terrible reaction and he had an out-of-body experience. So I looked at all the dates, but I...
An out-of-body experience? Did you understand what they meant by that?
No, I don't. I don't know what they really meant by it. Because when you leave intensive care, and they were brilliant down in intensive care when all this happened, because they rang me, could I get up straight away, you know? And when you leave intensive care, you're just walking out with a... They put his stuff into a black bag. No one spoke to me. And you just walk out with my family and my kids.
Had he passed away at that stage?
Yeah, he just passed away. And I ran back in. I remember running back in just because I wanted to give him one more cuddle and he was gone. Obviously, they needed the bed or the coroner needed him. Or, you know, and it's just you want answers.
How old was he?
He was 48.
Oh, you're such a young couple and you're such a young...
Yeah, and we
young
were...
Young mother and widow now to get on your own.
My mum still says that we were somebody dating still. Like, we were very much still at that thing, you know. Like, we never, yeah. And he was very hands-on. He coached people, you know, teenagers, the camogie. He was very much... He just loved doing things for people.
So are you now, 5 years later... Obviously, you're still grieving and mourning. Do you mind me asking your husband's first name?
Stephen. He's from Enniskillen and from Anna, and he lives here. He loves
Enniskillen. Enniskillen is such a beautiful, beautiful town. I absolutely love it.
We lived there for a while.
Isn't it just beautiful, beautiful people?
Beautiful. You were on about it one day.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, I love
it. Talk about it. I'm like, oh my God, you know, it's just. But yeah, it's hard, and it's hard on widows too, you know. Young widows more so. Well, that sounds bad, but
how's
this?
Okay, well, tell us a little bit about how it's hard for you with two small kids on your own.
Well, they're actually now, they were, when he died, they were 15 and 18, which was kind of a tricky age for them, all of them, doing their inter cert and their leaving cert. They're now, Oren will be 21, and Alana is 23, and they're great, but I just feel like, look, we're lucky he had a good job and we had life insurance, but like that goes too, and there's no help. I've sent emails for other women and other men that like helped you go from a huge salary to nearly €300 a week.
So you could go a huge salary where everything is great in every aspect of your life, relationships, covering the bills, nice home, healthy children, to a widow's pension.
Yeah. And the thing is, I suppose he was out of work for a month, mind me, because I'm on invalidity pension now. And I never change off to widows because they more or less tell me it's the same thing. I won't get anything else.
What support do you get?
You don't get none on widows. You just get your widow's pension. You get fuel allowance.
Are the kids still at home, 21 and 23?
Yeah, they are.
Yeah. Are they working, college?
One's working and one's in college, but... I'd love to have the courage to start something for other widows, you know, that, you know, imagine being a young widow and having three young babies or something. How do I do it? You know, there's just no support there.
So you could be a young widow with three young children, and we all know, let's be honest about this, children are expensive, and as they get older, they become more and more expensive. It's a huge amount of responsibility to parents to make sure that they have enough money in that regard. So you have three young children and you could be trying to do everything on 300 a week. Sometimes you might even have a mortgage to pay as a young widow on 300 a week.
Yeah. Well, I'm lucky. Look, I'm mortgage free.
Well, I know that, but you're talking about, in fairness to you, your life is tough, but you're thinking of life was tougher for other people. But it sounds to me that you have a lot of unanswered questions with regards to what happened with regarding the death and the illness of your husband, Stephen?
Yeah, I do. And I think that's why you never grieve properly, because it's always in the back of your head, you know.
Was the last conversation you had with him was a confused conversation the night before, was it?
Well, no, because he was okay. That was a few days previous and they got that under control.
How was he the last time you spoke?
He said, Fee, they'll be giving me now the drug. They told me I'd be a bit groggy, so you mightn't hear from me, love, now in the next 2 hours. And I said, no worries. I said, I better get a shopping in now. My sister brought me, which she was amazing to me. And I said, I'll go and get a shopping now because we were living off Deliveroo, you know, and she's coming home and I'd do a nice dinner. And then I was like, why aren't they ringing me? No one's ringing me, like. And I rang and they said, can you hang on a minute? And I knew when I rang by the nurses, she was a bit off taken. And then the guy rang me back, said the understudy that always rang me because I begged him, would he ring me every day for, you know, a report because you can't see him. And he did. It wasn't the main consultant ever rang me. And
well, bear in mind, this was during COVID, was it? You couldn't visit then, right?
No.
So
no.
Zoom calls and WhatsApp videos and text messages. Okay.
Yeah, from my husband,
To
me.
Go on,
call. And he just said, can you hang on 15 minutes? I always remember. And I said, yeah. And then I was at my parents' house and I said, oh, there's something wrong, Dad. Drop me up to the hospital. They want me up, but they said, can I hang on 15 minutes?
Can you hang on a few minutes?
Yeah.
Because I want to finish this conversation out of respect to you and Stephen correctly. Are you okay with that, Fiona? And you're doing a great job. You really are.
Yeah.
So I know you were nervous coming on, but really it's a credit you coming on in the first place. So we'll chat after 11, all right? Hang in there. Text 0868104106. We're hearing a very moving and emotional story with Fiona. And thankfully she's okay to talk for another few minutes. So Fiona, you're right. You with me again?
Yeah, I am.
You're grand. So when you called because you hadn't been hearing anything, you were asked by a member of staff, can you hold on for 15 minutes?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then I just got a gut feeling and I said, Dad, will you drop me up? Because they had told me come up originally and then they rang me back. And I remember I was by the Wilton roundabout because we don't live too far. And they said, Fiona, where are you? And I said, I'm by the Wilton roundabout. You need to get her now. So I got there and I was brought into a room and I just had to wait. They were working on him and I went into this room then. There must have been about 15 members of staff all along the wall. You know, nurses, doctors. And they just said, we're going to move him down to ICU now. And they just said, telling you nothing. And I kind of know at that stage, like, you know, I was like, fuck. Oh, sorry. And
tell him you love him, yeah.
Yeah, and give him a cuddle. So I did, and then they moved him down to ICU. And I remember my sister then got my kids, and she was coming up on the lift, and she turned them quickly because she saw Steve on a trolley, and she turned their back and went, oh, it must be this way, but she knew it was the wrong way. And so then they brought us down, and they said we could all go into ICU. So that was nice. They gave us a family room, and we were there for 2 days with him. And, it was just, you know.
Did he ever regain consciousness?
No, never. Never. And I remember saying at one stage, you know, you were holding his hand. I was, and the kids were there and whatever. I said to one nurse, his hand has gone like cement. Like, it's hard. And she came off to check, and then they said, we need to move Steve. So they moved him for a scan, and that's when they said then his eye popped when they moved him. So it was just horrendous. You know, he was coming home that day. Well, 2 days then he was in intensive care. But it's just visions that you just can't get out of your head and the kids and, you know.
Were you there when he passed away?
Yeah, but he was more or less gone anyway. You know, he had a strong heart. I was just waiting for that to go, and I remember my daughter said to me, Dad's colours after changing, and then the nurse just came up and went, it's time. So, yeah, that was it. And it was just kind of, and they were so lovely. There's not a memory box there for the kids because they were in their school uniforms the whole weekend. And they said, I think they said they usually do it for babies, but they just done it for my two. And it was lovely, you know, a lock of hair, his handprint. There was a little teddy in it that you put one into the coffin and you keep one. So we still have all them, which is nice. But and there were the ICU staff were just amazing. They really were.
Does anybody ever sit sit down with you and say, this is exactly what happened. This is what happened next and next.
I was brought into a room twice with consultants and two nurses. And they did say, look, Steve will never be going home because he, you know, he'd be going to a special equipped home. And I was sitting there going, oh, my God, how am I going to pay for this? How am I going to do it? So the things that you worry about that I probably shouldn't worry about.
Yeah.
And then they called me in the second time to say there's nothing. He is going to go.
He's going to go? Sorry.
Like he's got, he's not going to survive. And then after that, no one ever spoke to me. I remember I moved in with my sister it was meant to be initially for a few weeks, and they took us in. They were brilliant for 8 months. And I remember going back to my own house, and there was a card in the hall from the consultant, you know, saying how sorry she was and all that. But no one sat me down and went through everything with me. But I remember being in the room first, sorry, and going back a bit now when I initially went back to. And the guy that rang me, you know, every day, young doctor, I suppose, the understudy. And I remember him, he just couldn't look at me in the eye when I was saying, he kept looking on the floor. I kept saying, but you said it would be fine. And, you know, and he just kept looking at the floor. He was just,
I'm just listening to you. And I would imagine, I bet my life that there are other people listening right now as well who would say you have unanswered questions, you know, that this...
Yeah, and I do Google the drug all the time to see what kind of drug is it, but I suppose I'm not good at researching it.
Okay, I mean, it's all very well to say that there are side effects and there could be consequences, and that was explained to you, but you're saying to me 15 minutes after he was given the injection of whatever it was, he had a reaction that ultimately possibly could be connected to his death.
Well, the fact that they told me on the phone that's worst case scenario and that wouldn't happen, and then that happened.
And then it happened. No, you can't spend your 5 years now not knowing exactly what happened and the timeline and the events and the treatment and the care and the medical intervention right up to his death. Like, For anybody, for it to be done correctly with any of us who have lost loved ones in the past, could be partners, it could be brothers, sisters, mothers, fathers, we know, and maybe there are others that don't, but we should be told and explained, this is what happened, there is risk involved in this, and this is, you know, what could happen. In your case, it was told it could happen, but it won't, but it did. So, I'm not saying you're looking for culpability or make somebody responsible for it, but you should know what happened.
Yeah, just a chat in the room and just go, this is what happened, coming up to it. And but it was all down to the anemia, the low blood thing. So that's what I said. So,
But if I was a widower and somebody had said to me, we still have things to do and, you know, we're observing him, but he'll be going home when?
Yeah.
Tomorrow was what they said?
The day he was getting the drug, he was going home that day, and he'd have to come in, I think it was for the next. Yeah.
So he was. So one minute he's going home, there's going to be an injection, whatever that is, that's unknown, certainly unknown to me, but he's going to be going home, and he didn't, his low point, and might be ongoing care and what have you. It goes from that then to he's not going to be going home. He's going to have to go into full-time nursing facility care or what have you. And then the third one, he's not going there either because he's going to pass away. Well, listen to me now. You need answers.
Yeah.
And my advice to you would be to get those answers.
I know. But you see, the thing is, like, you go to sister, and I did, because I was fine. We were moving out at the time. And he did think it was sus, but then you go to the UK or something, and then if it costs you all this money to remortgage your house, then people are caught, because then you have no home for your kids. So you just leave it go.
That's
what's happening with most people. You just can't do it.
You think?
Yeah, I think that's what most people are. It comes down to money. But they can't get, they can't push it further to the big boys, I suppose, you know, whoever.
But you don't know what happened.
No,
I
know.
You're in the dark. You're confused.
Yeah. There is no answers. And then, you know, just the autopsy and everything, reading up on that. And that wasn't very nice, you know.
I wouldn't give up. I wouldn't give up if I were you. I know you're saying that there are financial implications and financial pressure. You have to come up. You're saying to me you have to come up with money up front, is it?
Well, if it goes further than apparently the UK that I was told, you see these guys, and then if it goes further than them, it's...
What's
it's
the UK got to do with it?
Well, there's like five solicitors over there that deal for all these cases, high cases.
No, we have plenty of... I'm not advising you to go all the way. I'm only advising you to get somebody to help you to get answers as to what you do after that. But we are very capable solicitors. We are very capable barristers. We are very capable senior counsels. I know one or two senior counsels that are absolutely the world's best when it comes to medical investigations like this. I'm not suggesting you go for medical negligence. I don't know what happened. But we're well capable here in Cork to deal with all of these ourselves. And if you want any help or direction with who those people are, I'd be very happy to pass you on some information in that regard. You need answers, not culpability or responsibility, because I can't go that far. I don't know what happened. But you need to be able to, you need to know what happened and why it happened.
Yeah, definitely.
Let me know. Have a think about that anyway, okay?
Yeah, I will.
And how are the girls coping?
My son, the boy and girl.
My apologies.
No, you're fine. Yeah. They
have Oran and Alana, my apologies.
Yeah. They're good. We've our bad days, but we're always trying to be so positive. You know, I suppose what gets us by in the kids say now is, God, Dad wouldn't have not wanted to be in a home because he was such a doer, you know. So, but they do have very bad days. They still have very bad days.
Must be very lonely for you.
Yeah, it is.
Even with family and loved ones and friends.
Yeah.
There's still a loneliness.
Amazing. Since he died, people were just amazing. But you still, it's that nice. It's like, is this my life, you know? And I'm very grateful for my life and what I have and my beautiful kids, but it does. And you worry about getting older, you know? All them things.
Isn't it a beautiful thing that your kids would say that from their point of view, their mum and dad were still on their honeymoon all those years?
Yeah.
Isn't that beautiful?
Definitely. It's lovely. And the memories, as they say.
What lovely parents to have for kids to say that.
Yeah. They do. They always say really nice things and tell me how good I am.
Because you are.
They ask me. Yeah. But you have to put the kids first. Most people do.
Are there any... you do. You know, it's instinctive to do that. Absolutely.
Yeah.
It comes naturally to you, but it doesn't mean that it's easy. But are there any groups or support groups for widows, young widows, widows rearing children on their own?
Well, I did do a bit of Googling and I couldn't find any. But I did join a group. It's people, I suppose, from all walks of life. I don't even know if I can name them now, but they're down by Nan O'Nadel, and they're amazing.
Is it an organisation you're talking about, group, a support?
Yeah.
Well, I'd like to know what the name of it is.
It's called the Lantern Project. They're just amazing. They really are. And everything is behind doors. What's said is that, you know, they do all different courses, and they met lovely people that have... We don't go into detail about what our backgrounds are, to be fair, because when you're ready to talk about it, you talk about it, you know.
And do you now? Have you got to that point?
Yeah, we do. There's people that lost kids and you're like, oh my God, they're worse than me. Do you know the way you just would be initially like that, you know, but the different walks of life, some people, you know, don't talk about it, but it's just a lovely place to go in the morning. So I've done a meditation course. You know, I'm learning crochet at the minute because it's something I just always wanted to learn. Sometimes I would love to go back to work, but I know then my neck and spine will come at me again. I've had several operations, you know, because Steve took a month off, mind me, when he died.
Well, you know, you need the best quality of life for yourself, mentally yeah, and physically. Yeah. And if that doesn't involve work, don't work.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. But, so it's just keeping busy, really. That's okay. What I do, my gardening. I love my gardening, so. And, yeah, we got a dog, and that's the best medicine that ever came into the house. You know, so. He's our baby, even though he wrecks everything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Unconditional love.
Yeah. But look, hopefully there's someone listening and, other widows, there'll be help out there soon for widows.
Okay.
You know,
well, I would like to hear from them because there's strength in numbers. And, you know, I think even your conversation, as tragic and as heartbreaking as it is, you know, it might console other widows who have also gone and walked the same route as you and now are saying to themselves, oh, it's not only just me. There are others like me who feel the very same way. So listen. Have a think about that anyway. And let me know, you know, because clearly it is playing on you and you do dwell on it a lot as to what was that all about?
Yeah, I do.
And come back to me on it. Let me know.
I will, of course, Neil. And thank you so much. And I love listening to you.
Well, thank you for listening, Fiona. You're a wonderful, wonderful woman.
All right. Thanks a million, Neil.
I'm very proud of your beautiful husband, Stephen, and your two gorgeous children, because I know they are of you.
I am.
Take care.
All right. Thank you.
Bye. Text 0868 104 106 after the break.